So we all know the common ones. Confident gentlemen never ask for directions. They never fully read the instructions, and they never choose the restaurant on where they're gonna go eat. Just kidding.
Really though, in today's episode, we're gonna be talking about some of the lost cultural markers of manhood and how they can be recovered. Stay tuned.
So before we jump into this episode, we like to start with our handshake. And the handshake, the masculine virtue today, is building a rule of life into your day. That's a schedule, an order that you can go through from beginning to end of your day and that you generally follow. It's so important for men to order their days rightly so that they can grow in virtue, grow in holiness, and be an example for others. So I encourage you to start small. It doesn't have to be a huge rule of life that every 30 minutes is decided for you, as if you're living a monastic tradition or something along those lines. But start by at least waking up at the same time every morning. So hopefully we all have examples of gentlemen in our life that we looked up to. I know that for me, I have two that pop right out. I feel very blessed to have experienced these men in my life, but one of them is my father. Yeah. So my father was a gentleman, whether he ever defined himself like that or not, not the case. But I remember as a kid, him waking up and leaving for work at 5:45 a.m.
Yeah.
Every morning.
Wow.
And he was always dressed in a suit, had his leather briefcase, always looked presentable, but was always on time and understood the responsibility that he carried for taking care of our family. And what an example. Even if he didn't love his job, he did it.
Yeah.
You know, that John Wayne quote that you've mentioned a couple times, he saddled up anyways. Mm. And that example for me was something that I'll always be grateful for having had in my life. Another man is my grandfather, my mother's father. He went to Mass every day. He was an utmost in respect of others and in dignity, and even willing to go to bat and protect those that were vulnerable. He understood Holy Mother Church and her teachings. He adopted them, but I think that character of masculinity that he portrayed to all of us was that of charity and love. So those are two examples, and I just couldn't be more thankful for them in my life.
Yeah, in my life too. I think of my stepdad, who I consider a real gentleman, but he always treated everybody with extreme courtesy and respect. Even if they weren't very respectful to him, but he just had that marker about him. But also just little things that he would do, like when it was, you know, freezing cold out. We grew up in Wisconsin, you know, so it was often cold in the winters, and it was snow coming down and, you know, massive drifts. And, you know, he'd go out, you know, after church, after church was over, he would go out in the snow and he'd warm up the van for us. And he'd wait till it was warm, and then he'd come and get us, you know, and make sure that, you know, we didn't really have to endure any discomfort there, just because he was a gentleman, you know, and that's what gentlemen do. And we could have all tramped out there with him, but he wanted to make sure.
And did he ever complain about that?
Were you, no.
Exactly.
In fact, he seemed eager to do it.
Amen.
And just as a act of kindness and generosity. And I could give lots of other examples of things that he did, but I really look up to him as a real gentleman.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I think that's really what we're going to jump into in the episode today is what happened to that, right? We've all seen those memes of men 60 years ago, you know, dressed up in a suit, had the, you know, fedora or trilby or some sort of, you know, hat on with the briefcase, compared to men of the same age today that are often still living with their parents in their 30s. They are wearing tie-dye shirts and capri pants, and they have a mohawk. Yeah. And we see these things, and we wonder, is there a crisis of masculinity? Is there a crisis of what it means to be an authentic man in today's society? And I know I sure believe there is, and that we have a duty to carry ourselves, to learn what it means to be an authentic man, and to carry ourselves with that sort of pride and authenticity.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I think there is a crisis both in the substance of what it means to be a man, as well as in those external cultural markers of manhood that give shape to cultural expressions of manhood. So, for example, men have not always dressed the same.
Right.
Okay, so, you know, an Edwardian gentleman in a top hat and white gloves was not the same as a Renaissance gentleman in, you know, yellow tights.
Right.
Thank goodness.
Right.
Well, right?
Thank goodness.
But nevertheless, the essence of manhood has always been the same, that courteousness, that self-sacrifice, that respect for the dignity of others, that generosity, that largeness of heart that gentlemen have always represented. But even that has been lost in our culture. Mm. So not only have we lost the, external markers, but also the internal substance of manhood has been eroded in our culture. So they often go hand in hand.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I do. I think there were cultural norms that were in place years ago that made certain things unacceptable, right? So maybe the outward sign wasn't reflective of the inward heart or devotion of the man, but they were presented in such a way that you were, you know, the exterior were unaware of the difference.
Yeah.
You know, but today, anything goes.
Yeah.
And you can wear whatever you want. You can do whatever you do. This me culture is let everybody do what they want, when they want, how they want, as long as it's not affecting me. And if it is affecting me, then it's wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge disservice to men of today, because how are young men who are maybe without a father, or young men who are grappling with these and understanding, what does it mean to be a boy? What does it mean to, you know, I see the biological difference, but what is it any more than that? And when society pushes the opposite and accepts everything, then anything goes, you know, And I just think that that's such a disservice. And so how much more grace is needed today to rise up and to fill in the void of masculinity today?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you think, too, of codes of honor and things in the past, manners. Manners are kind of a codified rules of respect. You know, so it was, our culture kind of rebels against that today. For example, in some and sometimes, you know, if you behaved in the wrong way in the past, you might experience some shaming. Now our culture recoils against that.
Right.
But in the past, the understanding was some behavior is shameful.
That's right.
You should be ashamed of acting like that. An example was, you know, I was reading some of the Little House on the Prairie books to our kids when they were younger. And, you know, there's this kind of scene where these guys are using coarse language, you know, and that's what they would call foul language, you know, coarse language. And, you know, but then a woman walked in the room and the guys immediately stopped.
Yeah.
You know, they cleaned up their act right away just out of respect to that lady walking in the room.
Yeah.
Now, it's just us guys, you know, whatever. But as soon as a woman walks in the room, we're done, you know.
Right.
And there was that cultural understanding that women were worthy of respect.
Yeah.
And if you disrespected a woman, you'd be shamed.
Unacceptable.
And again, like our culture, like, oh my goodness, shame is so toxic. Well, in some cases it can be, absolutely. But but the point was that sometimes treating somebody shamefully deserves, you know, shame.
That's correct.
You shouldn't act that
way.
You should be ashamed of that.
Yeah.
And so that's not always wrong.
No. And today we should
yeah.
call out our brothers
yes.
and our friends when they act as such. Yeah. And hopefully they're calling us out, right?
Yes, right.
Because we're all our brother's keeper. We're all helping in this together,
yeah.
you know? And yeah, if somebody does something foolish or if somebody does something toxic to themselves and others, you know, it's of the good to mm-hmm. charitably correct them.
Yes.
You know? And so, Sam, something that you and I have talked about to clarify things is what is a gentleman,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I know we can wane on and we can go for long periods of time and talking about outward and inward expressions of a gentleman. But generally speaking, how would you define a gentleman? And I know in your book, The Catholic Gentleman, you mm-hmm. save a number of pages to this.
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it is a man who is got the raw material of manhood. That is, he's confident. He's, you know, he's got a courage. He's got virtue. He's maybe even a little bit dangerous in the sense that he has the potential to defend when he needs to defend and, you know, fight when he needs to fight. But all of those, that raw material of manhood yeah. has been disciplined. It's been channeled and it's all been oriented towards the good of the community and good of the other, ultimately.
Yeah.
So all of that raw material manhood has been shaped, it's been sculpted, it's been disciplined into something that can be of, you know, tremendous good to society and to those in it. Now, we all know what the opposite looks like.
Yeah.
We all know about a guy who may have, you know, giant biceps and yet yeah. may be an overgrown boy inside
right.
who can't control himself, who's always, you know, picking fights and chest thumping and trying to be aggressive and, you know, just as rude and insensitive and cowardly.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of names for people like that
right.
that we won't use on this show.
Right.
But the point is, a gentleman seeks the good of the other, and he uses that strength and that masculinity that is a gift from God. He's honed it and he's used it for the good of others.
That's right, and it doesn't happen overnight.
No,
you know. So I know that I like to talk about and discuss the these themes and understandings of the disruption after original sin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that disruption of mind and heart,
yeah.
right? Where our thoughts and our emotions are not always aligned.
Yeah.
And that of our will mm-hmm. is not directed to the good. It's directed to whatever is going to give us pleasure in that moment.
Yeah.
Also the disruption between ourselves and our neighbors
mm-hmm.
and the disruption between ourselves and God. And when I'm just hearing you talk, I think a gentleman is the individual that is working on unifying those things so that he's in control of his emotions.
Mm-hmm.
He's in control of his passions and his desires.
Mm-hmm.
He is disciplined, as you stated, in that aspect. And he is also working on bettering the lives of others,
mm-hmm.
right? And what better way to do that from that ultimate source, which is God, which is the good, the true, and the beautiful, and the eternal
mm-hmm.
God. So united in that way, then he's able to grow day by day in holiness. But if we don't have even the beginning of an understanding that that's what we should be shooting for, that
yeah.
that's a target set in front of us and an arrow guiding correctly,
yeah.
then we spend years wandering,
yeah.
you know, years lost in doubt and, you know, the thoughts of the world and opinions of the world, which are ever changing, you know, and what you and I, the world was teaching when we were kids is different, radically different even than today.
Yeah.
And we see that progression with, yeah. you know, cell phones and pornography use and fatherlessness and, you know, all of these things and, you know, the growing, agnostic, you know,
right.
faith of men today. And so, and if you ever were to press individuals on these things, it'd be hard for them to come up with a why, but that in it of itself is something that I think we need to work on
yeah.
is discussing the why and growing in that understanding. And it's not an easy task and it takes love, takes friendship. But
yeah. So the idea that we've lost these external markers, and I want to emphasize, we're going to talk about some of the external markers here in a second, but I want to emphasize that men haven't always looked the same, but again, these attributes that we're talking about virtuous self-control, towards seeking the good of the other and things like that, those are essential to manhood. So I would say that, that Edwardian gentleman that we talked about in the top hat, he could be a true gentleman, just like I would say a first century Jew like Jesus could have been a gentleman as well. And Jesus was the ultimate gentleman in the sense that he had all strength, all power in his hands at all times, and yet he never abused it. And in fact, he used it to defend and to aid the weakest, the most vulnerable, the wounded, those who were suffering in some way. Those were the ones to whom Jesus rushed, really.
That's
like
right.
Everyone else was telling him to shut up.
That's right.
Stop crying out. Leave Jesus alone. He's got more important things to do. He's the Messiah. Just leave him alone. And he would say, no, stop. I came for people just like that.
Yeah.
And again, he had all power, had all divine power, creative ability in his hands. He could have wiped out the entire Roman army with a snap of his fingers.
That's right.
But what did he use that strength, that power for? To heal, to bind up, and to elevate those who are around him. And that's what a gentleman does.
It sure does. I like that you're hitting on the fact that the faces of gentlemen are many.
Yes.
And I think about our church, and I think about, the Saint Jerome or the Saint Damon of Malachi, which we know, were, if you've read their lives, struggled with anger, struggled with quick-temperedness, But then you have Saint Francis of Assisi, you have Saint Martin de Tours, you have the humor of Saint Philip Neri or Saint John Bosco, and that's what we think about when we think about those two men, is that they were always, looking for games, looking for unique ways, wearing your hair shirt on the outside instead of the inside, Saint John Bosco doing magic tricks to teach the faith of the Lord. All of these are men that, it's not the guy who goes and works out every day or does two a days, or the guy who takes the discipline and pulls his belt off and whips himself with it. It's not the guy who takes on the utmost of pain and suffering and picks himself up by his bootstraps. It can be anything, but that temperament that God gave us, that disposition that God gave us unique to ourselves, is exactly what we're still called to cultivate and to work with in this direction for truth and unity as a gentleman.
And I think it's important that we emphasize that you can be a gentleman, being, a steel worker in Detroit or, a ranch hand in Wyoming.
That's right.
Or a businessman on Long Island, Manhattan.
Yeah.
You can be a gentleman in thousands of different contexts. You can wear thousands of different outfits.
Yeah.
It's not about wearing, $500 gloves.
That's right.
The most beautiful shoes or anything like that.
The most money.
And while those things, aren't wrong, and they in fact can, if that's our context that we're living in, it might not be a bad thing to aspire to. Nevertheless, like, the faces of gentlemen are many, and I've tried to emphasize that from the beginning of the Catholic Gentleman.
Yeah, absolutely. And you do a great job with that. And I think that's really important. But one of those common themes, which I think to just drive home here, is the building of virtue, right? Mm-hmm. The gentleman is the one who is building in virtue. And what are virtues? Those are those habits that we are working to acquire so that we move through our day to day with the good, with control, with obviously a reliance on God's grace, his confidence and not ours. But if you're not working on virtues, if you're not even aware of what a virtue is, and therefore don't even know how to strive towards that good, you're just the days are passing you by with without any growth and holiness.
Yeah, I was thinking of, you know, virtue. We're talking about virtue being habitual or disposition. Basically, the nutshell version of that is we want to make goodness easy.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's really hard for us to make the right choice. But when you're a virtuous man, goodness comes naturally to you as breathing.
That's right.
And you're a musician, you know this. I was listening to someone talk about practicing music, and they said the first thing, at first, it's extremely hard.
That's the truth.
You've got to learn the very basics of the notes and how to play them, and it just feels like torture, you know? But then, one day, it just becomes easy.
Yeah.
And things that used to be impossible, seem impossible to you, you're doing as second nature.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about when we're talking about virtue, is making doing the right thing as easy as breathing.
I like it.
Where you just habitually just do it. You just do it. You don't think about it. Because it's a habit. It's part of your character. It's part of your nature now.
That's right.
What virtue is all about.
That's right. You don't frequently have to ask, what would Jesus do?
Right.
You know, it's part of your very fabric and, you know, essence of your day-to-day operations. Yeah. I like that a lot, and I appreciate you triggering me with music. And you're exactly right. And as a teacher of young musicians, I remember being in those situations. I remember holding my trumpet and trying to get 45 minutes to 2 hours a day in a practice, you know, in like fifth and sixth grade and seventh grade and growing in that. And then all of a sudden, every single thing that I struggled with in my high school years is I can do in my sleep.
Yeah.
I can do, you know, at any time. And it's because I work towards it. It's exactly right. And that discipline is something that, again, is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
I encourage people to always seek counsel. You know, if they're struggling with it, seek that help of others and mm-hmm. maybe ordering things rightly or ordering things in a way that is conducive to your position and your time in life, right? So mm-hmm. the disciplines that I was working on in high school or, you know, college years are very different than mm-hmm. the disciplines that I work on now as a husband with five kids.
Yeah.
And I think it should be. There's never end, right?
Yeah,
and that's the joy that we end when we, by all things good and grace and holy, we achieve eternal reward. That's what our goal is. But we always strive for that as gentlemen. So I like that a lot.
Now we're going to talk about some simple do's and don'ts to begin living our virtuous lives and growing in confidence as a man. Because sometimes we do need those external anchor points.
That's right.
That can keep us from getting kind of lost on the sea of the many voices that are telling us this is what you need to be happy. And there's a lot of voices competing for our attention now.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes these external markers can be helpful reference points to keep us oriented on the path to virtue.
Absolutely. And it's that internal voice too. I want to bring that up. And I wasn't until you talked about that, but there's that internal voice of the easy road
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. how frequently we yearn for the easy road and the easy way. And that includes waking up. We talked about in the handshake, setting your rule of life, hitting the snooze button, you know, or waking up and not making your bed, right? I think of that great YouTube video that you reminded me of that naval officer who's, you know, talking about you want to change the world, you know, start by making your bed.
Yeah.
And how many times does somebody who's dedicated to making their bed wake up and think, today I'm not going to make my bed. Nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to notice, right? And that internal voice, that temptation is in us both.
Yes.
And is something that we are constantly having to push against, you know?
So. Yeah, greatness or lack thereof is determined by little things. Thousands of little things adding up either to a poor character or a great character. So those little choices matter.
Yeah.
But right now we're going to talk about seven external things that we as men can practice to kind of confirm ourselves as a virtuous gentleman And we won't belabor these, so don't worry, you're not going to be here for 2 hours. but we want to just kind of give you 7 things that you can apply to your own life.
That's right.
As you seek to be a gentleman.
That's right. So the first thing is your behavior.
Yeah.
And I would say your morning routine, right? So that's the easy, practical aspect of behavior. We were already alluding to it. The waking up before your family, right? Mm-hmm. Or waking up at a set time. If you don't have a family, waking up at a set time every morning and then going directly to your prayer time.
Yeah.
I am a huge proponent and a huge fan because I've experienced 20 some years not doing this. Mm. I'm a huge proponent. I have made my bed. My mom set that in on me. But I'm a big proponent of turning to prayer time right away before the worries and anxieties have really have the opportunity to start clicking in your brain, you know, so that you can focus on that which is most holy. So
yeah.
I'd say behavior, and if I were to give a direct bullet point associated with behavior, I'm thinking waking up in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah, the other aspect of behavior that I really want to emphasize too is treating holy things as if they were holy, okay? So nothing drives me more crazy than going to Mass and seeing somebody in, you know, rubber flip-flops, you know, SpongeBob t-shirt or something, you know, and cut off jeans, shorts, you know, and just, you know, and approaching the Lord with complete casualness and disrespect and over-familiarity. Yes, Jesus loves us. Yes, he's our friend. But you can't forget that he's the God of the universe.
Right.
And there's literally angels veiling their face in front of him, you know, angels that could snap their fingers and, you know, throw us into oblivion.
Yeah.
They still respect God and say, holy, holy, holy.
That's right.
So we need to treat holy things with holiness. When you enter a church, you genuflect, you cross yourself,
right.
You know, you show that respect to that is due to the God of the universe. And you don't treat holy things casually, indifferently, overly familiar.
That's right.
You show God the respect that he deserves. You know, I think of the book of Isaiah when he saw, he said, God high and lifted up, you know, on his throne and his train filling the temple. He's like, first thing he said was like, woe is me, I am undone. Basically, I am destroyed. That's what he said. Like, you just so overawed by God's presence. And Christ does come to us in humility in the Eucharist, but we should strive to do our best to show him that respect. That doesn't mean you wear a tuxedo to Mass.
Right.
But it does mean you strive to show God the respect that he deserves in whatever way you can. And it's more a matter of the heart than the externals, but the heart should be reflected in the externals. We should be careful not to divorce those two, as some people like to do, and say, well, only the heart matters. Well, no. Your heart is inevitably expressed in your actions. So
I agree.
Reflect that in your behavior.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And that there was a time when you would walk in front of a Catholic church where you would take your hat off and do the sign of the cross out of respect for the Catholic Mass and things that had happened at any time. And I encourage gentlemen listeners to always do the sign of the cross when they when they go in front of a church. It's just one little reminder of keeping the holy holy, and not not being too casual and too flippant with it. So it's good you brought up attire and Mass, and I think that number two, you know, of our 7 things is that a gentleman never wears pajamas and slippers and a ratty t-shirt to Walmart, so you know, or out, because a gentleman understands that his outward appearance is reflective on himself, his dignity and self-worth. It's also reflective on his family, and it's also reflective on his faith, right?
Yeah.
And so Francis de Sales talked a lot about the importance of being groomed and cleanly, because people, you never know when that divine appointment is going to present itself and when you are going to be called to discipleship and to evangelize, and that if you are, you know, ratty-tatty and you're it's undesirable to be around you, then you're not doing yourself a service or others.
Yeah, I heard someone tell a joke once. They said, you know, I was recently at Walmart and they didn't have what I needed. So now I have to go home, take a shower, and put on some real clothes and go to Target. But really, though, like that whole point of self-respect,
self-respect,
as well as respect for others.
Yeah.
Because what are clothes? Well, they're a form of communication. They're a form of saying something about us to someone else. So if you go to Walmart in your fuzzy slippers and your pajama pants, what you're saying is, not only do you not matter, I don't matter.
That's right.
I am not worthy of respect, and you are not worthy of respect.
That's right.
And it's a form of communication. So, you know, does that mean, again, that we have to wear, you know, Brooks Brothers everywhere and, you know, suits and ties? And people used to.
Right.
But in our context, that might be a little over the top. But we still should dress with dignity and respect, even if it's with great simplicity. You know, there's times when I've... it's oftentimes about how you carry yourself, too. You know,
Right. There's
times when you can wear a T-shirt that in the context is totally appropriate.
Yeah.
But the way you carry yourself and the dignity with which you carry yourself can translate to others. So just be aware that clothes are communication and you are saying something about yourself and about other people with what you wear.
That's right.
Other than that, I don't want to prescribe any specific rules about what's appropriate wear. You know,
agreed. And you know, and these aren't absolutes, like you were just saying. Like there are those moments when we are under the car working and we need a new socket and we've got to run to O'Reilly or AutoZone or, you know, one of those locations, or we are, you know, in the midst of putting up a fence and we need an extra fence board and have to run to Home Depot. You know, I'm not saying stop everything you're doing, go change what you're wearing for these situations, but those are exceptions to the rule, right? Those are infrequent.
Yeah.
And so when you're frequently going out, have that respect and for yourself and for others. I love that idea that your clothes are communicating to others. Mm-hmm. I've never actually heard that, and I think you're exactly right.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing.
Well, the next thing we want to talk about is something that gets me a little worked up sometimes. But it's this idea of, if you're going to ask a girl out, don't do it by text.
Right.
And for goodness sake, if you're going to break up with her, don't do it by text.
Yeah.
You know, I think that we use technology as a screen, a defense against our own insecurities a lot of times. And that's not a good habit to get into.
Agreed. You know, there's that saying that this reminds me of, that nice guys finish last. And I've come to realize that that saying generally is from men who are cowardly and lack the courage to go experience failure and then keep on going.
Yes.
You know?
So true.
And so what happens when we have never, we're fearful that a girl is going to turn us down or a girl is going to say no, then we, we hide behind that phone and we shoot that text and we say, you know, hey, will you go on a date with me? A gentleman never does that.
Yeah.
A gentleman never does that. I also think a gentleman, like you said, never breaks up with a girl. Why? Because, via text, because women all have innate dignity that we have to respect at all times, all humans. But in this situation with courting women, be a man. And verbally communicate that and be prepared for you know, the no, and that's okay.
Well, and what a great opportunity to practice courage.
Yeah.
Okay? If you think about a lot of our lives these days, we don't have a lot of opportunities for courage. You know, we're not like the soldiers 67 years ago storming the beaches of Normandy.
Right.
And thank God we haven't had World War III yet.
Yeah.
But the point being that it is, I understand the fear of rejection can be very powerful.
Yeah.
But it paralyzes a lot of young men today. Absolutely terrified of making a mistake.
That's right.
And honestly, when I was in school, I asked a lot of girls out and got a lot of no's.
Yeah.
And it hurt every time.
Yeah.
And yet, every time, I got a little bit braver.
That's right.
And when you're seeking a spouse, all you need is one girl to say yes, right? So, but no, that facing those fears was so good for me.
Yeah.
So good for me. And yeah, it hurt, but I grew tremendously through that. So use that as an opportunity to face your fears, man up, and, right. you know, plunge in and see what God will do. Even if there's a no, it's not the end of the world.
That's right.
You can always recover. You can always keep moving forward. So don't let that fear paralyze you.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
And so with courage, as we're talking about, it's a great segue into the next one, which is defending a woman's honor.
Yeah.
And so this idea that all women are created as we are in the Imago Dei, you know, in the image of God, they are all deserving of our respect. It is important for us as gentlemen, whenever the case might happen, that a female is being disrespected, that mm-hmm. a gentleman will stand up mm-hmm. for her dignity.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to think about our wives and our daughters, you know, and standing up, or maybe our mothers to stand up in these situations. But it's also necessary to stand up for women in general, you know, if it's in a grocery store, you know, yeah. and she's in need of help and right. these sort of things. So a gentleman understands that and is willing to yeah. stand up.
An example, like, you know, a woman struggling with a bunch of heavy suitcases. I've seen someone do this yeah. on an airplane where she's trying to get a heavy suitcase in the overhead bin. You know, and a guy will come up and he'll say, hey, let me help you with that. And he'll lift it up. And what a great opportunity to be a gentleman. But yeah. also another example is kind of from my own life.
Yeah.
And back then I was more cowardly and I regret sure. not standing up. But, you know, locker rooms.
Yeah.
Guys can talk extremely crude about girls in
yeah.
locker rooms.
I experienced that myself.
Yeah. And, you know, what a great opportunity to be a gentleman and say, you know, hey, stop talking about her like that. That's yeah. not cool.
Yeah.
Don't do that. You know, defend a woman's honor, even if she's not there.
Correct.
And I think that's the standard we should strive for as men, is to always respect that image of God. Because really the external appearances, let's face it, some people can be kind of externally yeah. Unattractive in their behavior.
Yeah.
They can be rude. They can be crude. Some women don't externally deserve respect because they're not respectful.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's just a veil
yeah.
over what you are saying is really the image of God imprinted deep on their soul. And that's what we need to reveal yeah. to them, even if they don't realize it about themselves.
That's right.
Some women have never been treated with dignity
Correct.
Or respect in their entire life.
That's
they
right.
don't even know what that looks like. Mm. So when you treat them with dignity, it just blows their mind. They don't even know what to make of that. But we're called to do it, even if they don't feel like they want it or if they don't deserve it. Regardless, we treat them with respect no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. Amen. Another thing, I guess number 5 in our list here, is that a confident gentleman never consistently requires others to make decisions.
Mm.
So a confident gentleman can get over himself, maybe his melancholic nature, if that's the temperament. Mm-hmm. And this is not an excuse to be forceful or arrogant or, you know, prideful. Like,
yeah.
this is the only way. So I know that that's something that a lot of men struggle with. But we've been talking about men that aren't aware of what is right and aren't aware of how to step in,
yeah.
you know, to the situation arise, to the occasion mm-hmm. as the situation might call for. Well, I know one thing in my particular marriage that my wife is always appreciative mm-hmm. is if I make the decision on eating out.
yeah.
So we don't go out often, but when we do, all our kids have different opinions. And my wife has already made 1,000 parenting decisions that day.
Yeah.
And she's just in need of me, you know, to make that decision. And it's a delicate balance because I want to consult with her and I want to make sure I'm not choosing a place that mm-hmm. that she would not care for. But in those situations, like, well, have a backup then, because if you suggest this and she says, well, I'm not really feeling that, yeah. then you're prepared with the next option. But requiring her to make that decision because you're not willing to commit, or maybe you're not even willing
yeah.
to pay attention in that moment
yeah.
is not a trait of a true gentleman.
Yeah. Well, and I appreciate that you emphasized that we need to be careful with that, because I've definitely forced some things in the past that I regret in my family. But also, oftentimes, women look to the man in the home to make a decision. They don't want to carry that burden.
No.
Because, but men, why do we avoid that?
Yeah.
We want to avoid consequences.
Yeah.
Well, what if I make the wrong decision?
Right.
You know, what if I picked a restaurant and nobody likes it? But sometimes with bigger decisions, it's even more important than that. Like, are we going to move or are we going to stay? Are we going to take this job or are we not going to take this job? You know, things like that. And men, like, there's that fear wells up within us. What if I make the wrong choice? And there's negative consequences
yeah.
from that. And so we just say, no, honey, you decide. And we make maybe even make it sound like we're being courteous.
Yeah.
But really, we're just afraid. Like, no, I'm going to make this decision and accept the consequences that come with that before God. You know, and that's something that takes a lot of courage.
It
We've
sure
talked
is.
About the courage in almost every one
we,
of these
we
points
have,
so far.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a development or a virtue that we all need to develop. But make the decision, man up, and just plunge in and accept the consequences come what may. Use your prudence, use your best judgment, but then leave the consequences to God.
Agreed. Yeah. And so number six, which is also uniquely good stair-stepping that we're doing here, and I can say that it wasn't the intent, is humility,
yeah.
right? So a true gentleman avoids arrogance at all costs.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't mean that you are not called to be a leader. It doesn't mean that you are not called to make decisions,
mm-hmm.
but you do so humbly. You do so with magnanimity,
yes.
as we spoke about in a previous episode. You do so with that understanding that all that are entrusted to you or all that are in that situation, be it an employer, you know, who needs to be a leader, be it a military general that needs to be a leader, mm-hmm. Or a father that in many cases needs to be a leader, he does so with humility.
Yeah.
He does so with an understanding that everyone there has equal dignity and is yeah. on their own path to hopefully to holiness and to growth in life.
Yep. Yeah, humility is truth. It's acknowledging what you are. It's acknowledging your creaturely limitations. Mm-hmm. And I think no matter how great of a man you are,
yeah.
You're still small in the scale of things.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're an incredibly accomplished businessman or something, there's probably always somebody more accomplished or greater than you
For
are.
Sure.
You know, even if you're, you know, the greatest philosopher or theologian, there's probably one that's even greater than you. And even if that's not true,
yeah.
there's still angels and archangels and cherubim and seraphim. There's way more powerful creatures in the universe than you. I remember perspective can make a big difference.
Yeah.
I remember I was flying recently and I remember, you know, things look different from 20,000 feet. You look down on these massive skyscrapers that somebody might have been very proud about building.
Yeah.
But from 20,000 feet, it looks like a twig, you know,
That's
it looks
right.
like nothing, less
yeah.
than nothing. Not to say that what we do doesn't matter,
right.
but the point is perspective,
Absolutely.
The things that maybe seem great to us as human beings in God's eyes, in the eyes of, you know, the angels and saints in heaven,
yeah.
may be incredibly small. So it's not to say don't strive to be the best man that you can be. But keep things in perspective.
Amen.
You're not God. You're just kind of a dust mite in the scheme of things.
Oh, that's right.
And remember that.
Yeah.
And don't treat others as less than you.
That's right. Yeah, because they're not.
Right.
That's exactly right.
Right.
So wonderful. So the last and final one, and one that we've talked about in private conversations, is you know, an authentic gentleman never gossips.
Yeah.
So gossiping is toxic in all situations. It's toxic in work life. It's toxic in family life. It's toxic in friendships. And it's, I guess, toxic in parish life even.
Yeah.
You know? And so gossiping can lead to the sin of detraction or calumny or just many other areas of sin.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to keep gossiping in check, because when gossip occurs, it's not really benefiting anyone.
Yeah.
You know, it, but it's that temptation, though, to share the news, you know, that other people might have, or the, or the, you know, the salacious, you know, topic, or, you know, whatever the case might be.
Well, and a lot of times guys associate gossip with women. Well, guys don't do that.
Right.
Absolutely not true. Men can are just as tempted by it as other things. And sometimes other sins that are more obvious, like lust and things like that, are the ones that we focus on.
That's right.
But oftentimes for men, it can be a power game.
Yeah.
You know, where we can, by bad-mouthing someone else, we make ourselves look better, and, you know, puff ourselves up and, you know, ruin someone else's reputation in order to advance. You know, a place that often happens for men is in the workplace.
Yeah.
You know, oh, my boss, he's such a jerk. He's such an idiot. You
right.
know, things would be so much better if he did it my way.
That's right.
And we can often take this very critical, condemning attitude towards those in leadership above us or around us in order to advance ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's toxic.
It is. Absolutely. You think about the workplace and the same sort of gossiping as, did you hear that I that he made this decision? You know that he did this with you know, with funds, or he did this with something along those lines, and that that helps no one. First right. off, it might not be true.
Yeah.
And second, it helps no one. You know, mm-hmm. no one leaves a conversation with gossip or venting, you know, and thinks, yeah. I felt refreshed. I'm glad I did that. That was
I really
leisurely.
Felt the spirit moving. Yeah.
That's exactly right. And so if it's not pointed towards the good, it's pointed towards something else.
Yes.
So now it's number seven of our
so
list.
So those here. Are seven markers that I think all men can apply to their lives and that can really help us advance on the road to virtue. But we're going to end with one of our favorite parts of the show, the nightcap, which is our manly tool or item that's important to us that we really enjoy. And today we're going to talk about a fun one that's kind of emblazoned in the Catholic Gentleman logo, but that's pipes.
That's pipes, absolutely. Yeah. And so I'll start, but I want to make sure, Sam, you get to show your pipe roll there. But so the pipe I brought today is my churchwarden pipe. So you might not know the name of it. You might see it as the Gandalf pipe or the Lord of the Rings pipe or something along those lines. But it's a churchwarden pipe that's been around for ages. And it's got this extra long stem. And so there's a lot of different thoughts on why there's an extra long stem. So I know one of them that I first heard was, oh, well, it cools down the air, you know, coming in so that it helps you avoid tongue bite, you know, which is when your tongue starts burning. But anybody who's smoked a churchwarden knows that's not really
the case.
Really tongue bite happens just the same. And if you're not careful. So the other thing is that like around the gentlemanly circles, you know, where people or men were gathering and discussing and talking about, you know, civic duties or church duties or just societal life in general. Having the bowl further down didn't keep all the smoke in your eyes so that you could still keep that eye attention with someone else. So whatever the case might be.
Maybe it just looks cool.
I was just going to say, you finished it. Whatever the case might be, it looks really cool. And that's why I like this one. My wife got it for me on a Father's Day of mine. And there's something very sleek and smooth with the bend of the pipe that that I enjoy.
So. Yeah, well, that's awesome. I love church wardens. They make you feel like you're Gandalf or something.
Right.
But this is my pipe that I brought. It's a Danish pipe. Crown of Denmark is the maker of this. But it's kind of cool because it's got this little roughage here on the side. But it's different on the other side, and it gives the bowl, even though it's a symmetrically shaped bowl, it looks different depending on what angle you look at this pipe. So it's kind of a unique piece, but kind of a beautiful bronze colored briar finish here, short stem, but just a really fun pipe, and I really enjoy smoking. It feels really good in the hand.
Does it get hot in the hand?
No,
does it
doesn't.
Yeah.
It's kind of got a thick wall here, which you can see. which keeps it from burning your hand or anything like that. So I really like this one. It's one of my favorite ones to smoke. So anyway, if you haven't tried pipe smoking, it's really a pleasurable thing. I know everybody's got different perspectives on smoking and whether or not it's good for you, but you know, it's just a great way to relax, and it's actually very conducive to contemplation and deep thoughts.
So. Absolutely. And one extra added benefit is that pipe roll that you have there, this leather one that I think your wife bought for you.
That's right. Yeah, she got it for me for Christmas one year. It's a great way to take a pipe with you when you're traveling. It just unrolls here. This is really, you can't feel it, but it's really nice, soft leather.
I can attest.
It unfolds, and there's a place here for your pipe tools and your lighter, some pipe cleaners, and you put the pipe right in here, and then you can put your tobacco right along here in this flap, and then you just close it all up, and you roll it into a nice travel case that you can take with you to the airport or wherever. So
I love it. So hopefully you enjoyed that, and hopefully you have some pipes of your own. Feel free to take a picture, leave it in the comment sections, things like that, or pass it along to us on our website. You can check out our website, CatholicGentleman.com, for this and all other episodes, so I encourage you to head over there now. But as we end every episode, constantly with that reminder that we all need.
Be a man, be a saint.
Thanks for watching.